Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, I have Chris Boos. He's the founder of Arago. This is Technotopia.
Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.
Welcome back to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Chris Boos. He's founder and CEO of Arago. Welcome, Chris. We spoke earlier when you had a artificial intelligence playing a video game robot.
Yes, we talked at TechCrunch Disrupt about Civilization, which was great fun, right?
I know, that was a lot of fun. So I want you to tell me what Arago does, and I also want you to talk to me about this robot, because this is you're saying that it can now... play the game on different planets.
Yeah, it is. It has learned totally different strategies for totally different maps from different people. So basically, we have an artificial intelligence platform that does not just learn by machine learning, by observation. It actually learns from asking people, how did you do that and why did you do that? Which makes the learning effort much faster and also allows it to make use of the USPs that enterprises still have. So we apply this in all kinds of areas. We apply this in IT administration. We apply this in banking, in insurance. We apply it in food production, everywhere, where there is people that have experience and want machines to do the work.
So when we talked last, you told me about, you told me that basically what you guys do is you come into a building and you say, oh, what's the hardest thing that you guys have to do every day? And what's the most annoying thing? And then you point an AI to that thing, and then it writes a program for that, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So,
it creates a solution for on the fly.
So right? what about us poor humans? What happens when we want to go write a program and nobody wants to hire us anymore?
You see, I think we don't do the fully automated programming yet. I think coders are safe for a while because coding is so versatile. But generally, I believe in most industries, we have optimized and standardized the industry so much that constantly we make people work much more like machines. Most people are not very happy doing that. Actually, people are not made to do that. And you can see it in the amount of depression you get in these office jobs, and people get sick about this. So I think it's time that machines do the work that machines were meant to do, and people do the work that people are meant to do.
So what are people meant to do? Because that's an interesting point. What are we supposed to do? It's very confusing.
So I think there's an underlying theme. People are here to make experiences. I mean, this is what making new experiences makes us happy. And I think there's two main categories that we can make experiences in, right? So one is intrahuman. Humans just like to interact with other human. And yes, I was a shy kid too, so sometimes you don't. But actually, you really like interacting with other humans. It's just the way we're built, the way our species is built. We're social animals. We like interacting with other people. So we make experiences interacting with people. And a lot of these experiences actually turn into services, right? So we do something for someone either because we get paid for it or because they're our friends or because it simply makes us happy to see someone else smile. All these are social experiences. I think this is one huge part of what is going to happen in the future. I think all this service stuff that we have optimized, given up for standardization, so we could bring more automatons into the world, will go away, and the services will come back. And the other part is, of course, doing something creative, doing something new, and new experiences can happen. I would categorize this in three areas. Like, one is the artist, the typical artist that does something off mainstream, that has a belief that others don't have. You think you like blue pictures. Nobody else likes blue pictures, but you know that they're going to be great. And they're going to be the thing next year, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a very creative way of thinking, like think outside the box. We need these people who think outside the mainstream because they move us forward, not just artistically, but also socially and as a society as a whole. The second part is we need those people who really invent something, people who do something new, like the people who sat down and built a motor, and the people who sat down and found out a lot about physics, and all these guys that actually are fascinated, maybe by nature, maybe by the ideas, and build new things. I think this is the second part of creative jobs. And the third part of creative jobs are actually pioneers, like people who feel creativity when they take risks that other people maybe won't take. I mean, a few hundred years back, they stepped on ships and explored the world, and it looks like very soon they'll be stepping on spaceships and exploring other places.
So, again, everybody I talk to, we're looking at a new renaissance, right? We're looking at a move towards a more artistic populace. But is everybody, and it's awful to say, but is everybody ready to be an artist, or is everybody ready to be a friendly person at the whatchamacallit at a restaurant, right?
So I would say people are either creative or they like to follow people. But what we all are people, and thus we like interacting with other people. So I wouldn't be so surprised that if we find out that there are more nice humans out there than we actually predict. And sure, not everybody wants to work in a restaurant. People like to do other, more complicated services, I mean, that they're out there. This does not necessarily have to be simple jobs, but also simple jobs. If you look at me, you see that I like going to restaurants, right? So I can tell you the best place to be is a restaurant where the guy in the restaurant loves what he's doing. This is the best place. You get the best food, and it's just a place you don't want to leave.
And I'm gonna fight on this because absolutely. At some point, if we don't all have to go work at a 9-to-5, do we get what we think we get? I love this thing because I think you're even more optimistic than I am on this front.
In terms of payment. Or in terms of
in terms of interaction with humans, I like think about the SF world where you have a bunch of men, mostly some women, who are all dedicated to not being in the 9-to-5 world. And what does that create? One of the things that creates is an environment where everybody is against everything. So you kind of get an alt-right. We got an alt-right out of the bro culture of Silicon Valley, the alt-tech, I guess you could say. Am I correct in thinking that? Do you see where I'm going here?
But that's only one possible option, right? So if you look at it's a very special bunch of people you're describing in the Valley. I mean, they're all fascinated kind of by technology, and then they see that things in the world are broken, and then they see their fellow technologists behaving mm-hmm. in ways they don't like them behaving, and they've just found out, like, I mean, not so many years back, we were all nerds in the basement, right? And no one would talk to us. Now, all of a sudden, people are listening to us, so we start voicing what we don't like and what we like. So I wouldn't say this is, you can map this on everybody. It is diversity that is being created, right? So, in the end, and I very strongly believe that people are, there's a distribution of people. Their people are not the same. The greatest thing about people is that they're different, and they're good and bad people. And I think that if we give people more time, also bad people have more time, unfortunately. But as a general belief, maybe I'm too positive about this, but I think man is good in general. So why would we believe that we do more harmful things and in terms of creating than we do good things? A lot of people get very happy when they help others. So it's and you can see this. I mean, look at the hurricanes. Mm-hmm. A lot of people helped each other. Other people looted other people's houses. So there was the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? So
I guess it comes down to. What your version of utopia is when we come out the other end of whatever is going to happen the next 20 years, is it going to be generally a better place or the same or dystopian? Are we gonna have the same structure, or is this such a sea change in our experience and in our lives that everything really changes?
I think those are two questions, right? So yeah. The number one question is, will it be positive? I think it's going to be extremely positive. And if you don't mind, I'll say in a second why. And the second thing is that is it how should we say it?
I feel awful being mad about this too. So this is about optimism. So I want to hear your optimism. I love it.
Okay, let me argue the positive bit, right? So I think we're in a totally unique situation. The point that we had industrial revolutions before, and historically they all look the same. It doesn't matter if it's far back, like the invention of the wheel, or rather close by, like the invention of cars, or maybe the steam machine, if you want to have it more fundamentally. But these industrial revolutions have happened before, and I think it is completely undebatable that we have always come out better in the end. What has been very harmful was all these transition periods, right? And the last time we had industrial revolution, the transition period was very harmful. It took like two world wars and two economic crises to settle down. But then the longest peaceful period we had on the planet, right? So in the end, it turns out positive. The question is the transition period. And what I am so optimistic about is that this time, because we have created this technology and because also we have created the new economy, we are going to come out positive on both ends, not just the end result, but also the transition period. And I'd like to explain that one. Mm-hmm. Especially the Valley has played the big part in producing the new economy, like the platform companies, the people who think exponentially and put that into business models. And this is awesome. It is awesome because it threatens everything else on the planet in terms of economy. And if that just goes through, it'll be very harmful, right? It'll be only 10 companies in the whole world, and that's going to be a strange market. That's going to be a very long transition period, I believe. But the interesting thing is that the old economy companies that already exist and that maybe don't mind being disrupted but don't want to die, try to live up to this and also change their models and try to move on. And that is where the new technology, like this AI, plays in. This is exactly where the AI takes over whatever these people are doing today, which gives them the money and the time of their people to rethink how they do it. I mean, imagine if you have a German company like Volkswagen stepping in front of shareholders and say, like, okay, guys, we understand transportation is broken. We're not going to do cars for the next 2 years. We're going to think, and then we're going to come out with something that's going to be big, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody, they're going to be in the asylum pretty quickly. It's like, and the analyst is going to ask, like, so how many cars did you produce? Sounded, thank you for the disruption speech. How many cars did you make? And these old companies, they want to be disrupted. They want to be disruptive, but they have the problem that they can't be disruptive. And then at the same time, they're threatened. There are people marching into that and say, look, transport, we can do that much better than you. Tomorrow, we won't need you. And what if I say, like, I can run 80% of your company with the machine and you still have the same income, you're still threatened. You now can use the people and the money you have to reinvent yourself while no one gets pissed at you for no longer producing cars. Like, this is why this transition period is great. Currently, people are threatened. The economy is threatened. We have the Valley has really done its job. It has put big army in front of everybody, and put the way to disrupt things out there. And now people are thinking about how can we, like, resist? Mm-hmm. And they can resist by having whatever they're doing today, as to a large part, run by machines, and thus having the time of their people, especially of their people, because they really need to rethink. They really need to learn from their experience to redo it.
Okay, so what you're basically saying is that the so that the future, the stuff that needs to get done, like making food and I don't know, delivering toilet paper and stuff, will be done by not by humans anymore, which I understand. That frees us up with. I mean, that was an interesting point that somebody had a little while ago. Once we have self-driving cars, that frees us up to sit there in a car and learn Swift all day, or program, or do something interesting. What happens if we squander our free time? What happens if a bunch of humans? Yeah.
I mean, this is the general thing that I find scary about us, right? We us as people. There are all these resources that we want to have, like money and gold and status and whatever. Mm-hmm. All these are replenishable, basically, right? And even if we should run out of gold on Earth, we could probably mine it from an asteroid. But our lifetime is non-replenishable. Why do we waste it? Like, why are we wasteful with our time? Like, I totally don't get this. And I think that we have put this to be an art, wasting time. If you enjoy wasting time, if you do it like this, sitting on the docks of the bay guys, right? That's fantastic. You had fun wasting your time. But a lot of people just waste their time to not be bothered by their life. And that doesn't make sense at all, right? So we will have to learn to be human again and have time to do something that is worth doing.
Okay. Fascinating. All right. What do you do? What do you do to waste time when you waste time? Anything?
I love horse riding.
I like horse riding.
I love horse. Horse riding is fantastic, especially if you live in this fast tech world, right? Because mm-hmm. every day is super fast. On a horse, the world is kind of slow. Even if the horse goes fast compared to a car, you're slow. All of a sudden you see all this detail, and it's fascinating.
Okay.
It helps me to think.
I keep imagining the scene in Neuromancer when they go to Istanbul and they see a horse an extinct horse standing in one of the markets. So I'm kind of worried about horses too. And that's the one thing I imagine.
Gene pool reduction is a problem, right? We see that there's a lot of species going extinct and so on. But look, this is also all these people that cry wolf and say oh, these machines are going to put us all out of the jobs. There's a very wrong thing lying under this assumption. Like the assumption of the machines are going to put us all out of the jobs means that we're already doing everything that is necessary. Man, when I watch the news or when I look at the world, it doesn't really look like we're doing much of what's necessary. Sure. We need more time to do stuff.
Okay. All right. So you've been actually my most optimistic person in a long time. You've been very, very excited about this whole thing. You don't think it's going the way of Blade Runner. You think it's going the way of, I don't know, My Little Pony.
No, not at all. It's absolutely no. I mean, this is why I spend so much time of introducing AI in our enterprises and helping them to automate all kinds of different things and getting faster at automating and actually reusing their people's time is because I believe that this is a totally, we need to help these guys survive. They want to survive as companies. Mm-hmm. But there is much more willingness to do something disruptive than most people think. Disruption is not only coming from a very few places. Disruption is in a lot of places.
Okay. Give me a quick example of a disruption that was surprised you before we go.
I have to find something that I can actually talk about where we don't give out any of the client secrets, right? Oh, so let me put something out there that is socially interesting. Mm-hmm. I would have given examples from, for example, the food industry or something like this, but let me give something very basic from the IT industry. Our first commercial usage of our AI was to replace system administrators. Like the classical data center guy who manages networks and operating systems and software and deals with user tickets and all this kind of stuff. This is our first commercialization. Our fastest growing market of this is India. Mm-hmm. And India, of all places, I mean, they just created millions of jobs having people do things that we no longer wanted to do, like system administration and so on. These guys are disrupting themselves. They're cannibalizing themselves. They say, like, okay, we now know how to do this. We will teach it to the machine so we can do much more of it with the same people. So a lot of our people can move on to the next level because we're really hungry to move there. And if you've ever been to India, you'll see that even though it looks still there, there's all these tuk-tuks and all, right? You see sometimes when you are the cow in the street, but there's an atmosphere of moving forward. It's absolutely incredible. There's none of this fear that you often in Europe, you have this fear, oh my God, the future is coming. In India, you've got that we want the future now feeling. And they are really, I mean, we're always talking about businesses that need to cannibalize themselves. Our customers in India is exactly what they're doing, and they're coming out on top.
Mm-hmm. Why is Europe afraid of the future? I said we're gonna stop after this, but I want to hear this.
Well, I think it's Europe and America who are afraid of the future. I mean, we're at the top of the food chain, right? So the largest or the second, third, whatever largest economies in the world, we think like, oh my God, everything that changes can only make it worse. The point is we need to change to stay where we are. And I believe that we have this feeling that we have to make a step, right? It's very comfortable where we are. Mm-hmm. Plus, I also feel that, and I would say this for most Western societies, we feel that we've lied to a lot of people, right? I mean, we told our steel workers why we were outsourcing them to someplace that we'd still need steel workers. That's a lie. We should have told them that we don't need steel workers anymore, but we need their experience.
Fascinating. All right. We got to get you back on here because I want to. You're very excited about this. I'm happy to finally find somebody who's as excited about the future as I used to be when I first started this whole thing.
Let's get you back. Are you not excited anymore?
I'm trying. I'm trying my darndest. But I talked to one guy. I'll talk to, and he's like a marketing guy who's just like, oh, the future's going to be, I don't know, some program. Then I talked to some other folks like. Cryptocurrency folks, and they say that the world is going to be completely streamlined and automated and humans are unnecessary. And then we come in with you and you're very excited that there's going to be a chef in the future. And I'm very excited there's going to be a good chef in the future because people have time to make a beautiful meal as opposed to sit there and pump out 50 hamburgers a minute at a fast food place. So very exciting.
A great meal is as much about the people who make it for you as it is about how it tastes, right? Exactly. Even a machine could probably make a perfect menu, but it could never create this experience.
Excellent. Well, all right. Chris, thank you very much. Where can people Where can people play the free sieve robot?
I'll send the link to you.
All right, we'll post it on the we'll post it.
It's longer. Perfect. Thank you.
Chris Booth, thank you very much for joining us.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Technotopia is brought to you by Typewriter. Typewriter is your on-demand editor, and their amazing team of writers will make your book chapter, blog post, or email shine. Typewriter editors come from places like TechCrunch, Gizmodo, and the New York Times, and they offer low bulk rates for longer work. Check it out at typewriter.plus.